Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Welcome to an hour of mind power, and that is exactly what we are going to be talking about today is mind power par excellence, also relating to many areas of thought that you may or may not have familiarity with. My guest today is Joseph McMoneagle. His books, and I say books because I have two of them in front of me, one is Memoirs of a Psychic Spy, and the other one is Remote Viewing Secrets, a handbook. We've got two books here we're going to be talking about, and Joseph McMoneagle, welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna, how are you?
Well, I'm absolutely wonderful. It's just phenomenal to be able to have you on the air so that we can share your story with my listening audience. So many times on television, there are these programs that are put together, and people say, nah, this can't be possible. Russell Targ has been on my show. We've talked about many different levels of psychic and intuitive ability. But you are a man that went very, very far in the development of and the use of psychic abilities. Yet you had some talents when you were quite a young child. When you reflect back, what is your earliest experience about the psychic self that you can remember?
Well, it's about as far back as I can remember. When I was very small, I used to remember knowing things about some of my relatives before my parents got word from other relatives that things had happened. And I would speak about some of those things to my parents, and then they would come true a few days later. And this kind of interested my parents. But, of course, they were always telling me not to talk about these things to other people because they were nervous that people would think I was strange or that they would think that it was out of the ordinary.
Well, all of that's true.
Well, yeah, but back then it was frowned on.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine. Now, you have a foreword that's written in your book by Brigadier General L. Robert Castor of the United States Army Infantry, retired. And he's got so many other wonderful titles behind his name and various level of accomplishment. You became involved with the military, and this was to take you on a journey of life experience that you never ever thought you would evolve into. When you joined the military, that was a very significant part of your life.
Yes.
What brought in the change that allowed you to get into remote viewing?
Well, basically, I spent quite a few years overseas, well over a decade overseas, where I basically went from the Far East to Europe, and then back to the Far East, then back to Europe, and it was after those, basically more than 12 years overseas, that I received word that I was supposed to return back to the United States and report in for duty at the headquarters in Arlington. And I became a consultant, so to speak, directly to the commanding general of INSCOM, the Intelligence Security Command. And as a chief warrant officer, I was assigned at the headquarters, and it was to coincide in that period with the decision by the Army to develop a special project to mimic what the Russians were doing at the time, or what they believed the Russians were doing in the use of psychics for collecting intelligence using using psychics. So they needed to find people that were psychic within the intelligence, the Army intelligence arena, people with clearances, and I just sort of fell out in that search.
Now, you said that your records and test scores that had been recorded on you had been reviewed by Army intelligence and that you had scored in the upper 3rd percentile, and they really wanted to recruit you for this very, very special work. And they were really in the infancy with this. How much did they really know about what the Russians were doing, and did they really have a good idea of how they wanted to go about doing the training at the time?
No, actually they didn't. And one of the problems was basically a political problem. No one really, everybody kind of frowned on the use of psychics for anything. It was kind of a joke to everyone. We dare not actually hire psychics or use psychics. The word itself was actually a turnoff to most people.
Mm-hmm.
But they knew that the Russians were using them. And we had no way of getting a spy or anyone near the Russian project because it was buried so deep and it was such a black project. But we had no way of actually using psychics ourselves either. So someone came up with the idea in counterintelligence of running what they call a red op, where we would take some of our own people and train them to operate just as if they were Soviet intelligence agents, and we would train them to become psychic agents and operate just as if they were Soviet agents, and we would target them against our own material that we knew everything about and run this sort of temporary secret project where they would emulate the Russian agents, and then those agents would target U.S. material. And once we collected material acting as psychics, we could then turn that material over to an independent agency within the military, and they could evaluate our own collection. And by evaluating that, we could determine how good or how bad the Russians might be doing.
Before you really got involved with it, there was a supervisor you had, Ralph Maas, who really didn't want you to get involved with this. Did he know very much about what had been done? Had any previous testing been done where he saw the effects that were the result of what they were doing in training? Why was he so apprehensive for you?
Actually, no, he had not seen any results. He was extremely apprehensive about it for a number of reasons. The primary one was that I was the head of my entire military occupational specialty for the U.S. Army, so I was being groomed to be the top warrant officer for my specialty in the Army. And he was the one that was grooming me, and I had taken the place of the chief warrant who had run my military occupational specialty. So my place was at the headquarters, and they had the intention of keeping me there for probably the next 15 years. So I was being groomed for that position. Secondly, they'd gone out of their way to obtain me for that position because of my expertise and my years in the field. So I was in a position of great authority and responsibility, and I was in charge of a tremendous amount of material and people and funding. And so they were upset about the fact that I was being stolen for this project to begin with. And then on top of that, he knew that this would be extremely destructive to my career, that it would ultimately just destroy whatever career possibilities I might have. So he didn't like the fact that I was being moved into such an assignment.
Now, you met Russell Targ, and you were doing, or let me rephrase this, you were to do specific exercises with him, and he used the term outbounder, and the outbounder was an individual that was going to be going to a particular site, and it was a person that you were supposed to focus on mentally, that you would be able to get accurate information on. And by the time they did this, you had an independent judging of all the sessions that you were involved with. And they told you that you had 5 first-place matches and a second-place match, one of the best series results they had ever seen. Tell us what it was like when you did that. What did they do? How did they set you up? And what was the experience like? How did you feel about that when you were doing it?
Basically, they flew me out to Stanford Research Institute International and explained to me that a person that I had never met would come into the lab and would collect a location from a group of locations. That location would be chosen randomly about 45 minutes prior to my being asked to draw where they would be. They would get into a car and drive away from the lab area, and approximately 20 minutes prior to their having to be at a location somewhere in the San Francisco Bay Area, they would stop in the car and then open that randomly chosen envelope and follow the directions to some location. 1 hour prior to their arriving at the lab, I would be sequestered in a windowless sealed room with Russell Targ, and he and I, having no knowledge of what that random location might be, he would then monitor my having to describe where that person was in detail. After I would do that at a specified time when that person was supposed to be at that location, he would then take my description and he would be presented with 5 possible locations, one of which would be the actual real location that the person had been taken to or had gone to. And he would use my descriptions to match my description to the actual location that the person might have gone to. And he would say, "This Joe's description matches best this location, which is a first-place match, or this location, which is only a second-place match," and so on and so forth. And at the end of a series of 6 of those over the course of 2 weeks, I had 5 near-perfect first-place matches, which means that anyone could have selected exactly where the person had gone out of the 5 possibilities based on my drawings.
Now, there was a project that you became involved with called the Gondola Wish, and something that I think is very important because in your book, Memoirs of a Psychic Spy, the work that you were involved with was such high security, and it was very important that there be a total sense of trust and cooperation between all of the participants in this, because many times there could be a life or death situation here. And I find it so interesting that for so many years they denied that anything like this was going on, which is typical. But this was a whole new arena of being able to use the mind to be able to check on things and process information and to find out about what was going on. Tell us about what happened with this project about 8 months after it had started.
Well, the original project, like I said, was to emulate or to simulate what the Russians were doing and target U.S. interests that we knew about in great detail, and then turn all the material over to an independent agency so that it could be evaluated against what we knew about and therefore give an independent and very clear assessment of what the Russians might be able to do. and that was basically a three-year project. It was called Gondola Wish. The problem was about 6 to 8 months into our project, we had the Tehran-Iran problem occurred where they invaded our embassy in Tehran and captured a number of Americans. And the problem was they had taken the embassy on a Sunday, so they had no idea who had been taken captive and who had not been taken captive. And in order to know that and what had gone on inside the embassy grounds, they came and got a couple of us from the Gondola Wish Project and put us in a room and put 500 or so photographs on a table, which were all of the possible hostages that might have been taken in the embassy, and asked us to identify who the hostages were. And we were able, in a number of hours, to identify not only the hostages that had been taken, but three hostages that no one knew were in country because they were undercover agents of the another agency. In fact, we had sketched their faces because their faces weren't part of the photographs in the pile.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
As a result, we stopped being a study group and became an operational group. And that began the tasking of our operational group, which was called Grill Flame. That was the first name of the project in October of 78. And it lasted for approximately 20 years.
Amazing. Now, the question in your book was, what was targeted? And you responded, everything. Now, one of the requirements was that you could not listen to radio, you were not to watch the news programs or special bulletins on television, and you were to avoid newspapers and news magazines. And you and some others became so proficient at this that without being aware of it, you began reporting all kinds of observations, and because of this, they almost closed everything down because you had stumbled, as I will use your words, quite blindly onto the preparations for the rescue attempt being planned. It was almost as if there was this open pipeline of communication that you got into a rhythm with. And I can imagine at that time it was quite unsettling for the people that didn't really want to believe that this was possible.
That's correct. It created some major friction, especially with some of the people in the National Security Council and some of the special operations areas, because there was some very special planning going on for the rescue attempt, and there was being planned to rescue the hostages in Tehran. And, of course, that was very close hold, even from the people that were being trained for the rescue. They had no idea why they were being trained. The difficulty was that we, of course, were picking up on elements and pieces and parts of that training plan. And so we were reporting that along with a lot of the things that we were reporting on the hostages. And it was, some of the accuracy was good enough that some of us were called in and asked where we were getting our information. They thought it was being leaked to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we were accused of discussing things with people, and they wanted to know who we were getting our leaked information from, because they thought there was an interior leak within some of the agencies.
And in fact, in 1980, at the very end of that year, you did end up having a major leak. What happened with that?
I can't go into a lot of detail about that, but we did some work on a number of cases that involved some leaks of information. that with regard to some naval information, and there were a number of people that were arrested.
Ah, well, now with one of the people that you mentioned in your book, Brigadier General Dozier, that was a situation. It was he was kidnapped from his home at 5:30 p.m. on December 17th by Marxist terrorists known to be members of the Red Brigade, and I'm quoting from your book, who posed as plumbers.
That's correct.
He was at that time the senior United States officer at the NATO Southern European Ground Forces base in Verona, Italy. He was also the deputy chief of staff for logistics and administration. Now, they had hit him over the head with his pistol butt and forced him into a trunk.
Yes,
which then took him
correct.
To a van. I mean, this sounds like a James Bond special.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? They also secured his wife, I think, with tape at the time, duct tape or something. And then they drove off with him in a van or something. I can't remember the exact details now, but he disappeared. And at the time, they were very concerned about him because they had... there were a number of other kidnappings in which the people that had been kidnapped had been hurt, and I think one had been murdered, and so they were very concerned about his welfare and well-being. And we had a very small time period in which to locate him and find him. The problem was, by the time we knew that he'd been kidnapped, it had been 6 or 7 hours, so they had the ability to have moved him to even Eastern Bloc countries, so the area of search was very large.
Now, you have a procedure, or had a procedure at that time, where after quite a bit of practice, you would find yourself being able to do remote viewing very easily after you had gone into a deep state of meditation. This process that you used, with practice, I'm sure it was just as easy as anything can be once you practice enough with it. You were able to track him, weren't you?
There were one or two of us that were able to do it. And it was a collage of material that were put together by a number of us. And I was able to actually give a very exact location. And there was another man within our unit that was able to describe in great detail how he was being held, very specifically, that he had a set of headsets taped over his ears, and that he was being held inside a tent within the side of a room and chained to a radiator. I actually put him inside a very specific city within Italy and did a very detailed drawing of the building he was being held in, which staircase and which floor and which apartment, and drew the street map.
Phenomenal information. Absolutely incredible. One of the things I want to mention is that you were providing, the group that you were with was providing support to the CIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the DIA, the Secret Service, the Air Force Intelligence Agency, the Naval Intelligence Command, the Naval Investigative Service Command, the National Security Agency, the Army Intelligence and Security Command, the National Security Council, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the United States Coast Guard, two districts of that, the Drug Enforcement Agency, internal elements of the State Department, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and there are a lot of others that couldn't even be mentioned. Ingo Swann was a man that you worked with. He believed that people could be trained to do this. Your second book, Remote Viewing Secrets, which is a handbook, you believe very strongly people can be trained to do this.
Well, actually, we have evidence that all human beings that walk the planet are psychic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a matter of inborn talent that everybody has. Everybody's born with it. It's just a matter of that talent and practice. The what remote viewing actually is just being psychic under a very specific control. That very specific control is that you must be completely blind to the material that you're working on. And anyone in the room with you must be completely blind to the material you're working on. There's no exceptions to that. That's what differentiates between a remote viewer and a psychic. The idea is to force you to use your psychic ability and not be front-loaded in any way with any information.
I think that's wonderful. I think that's really, really great. And I know Russell still maintains an interest in this. How did this change your life, Joseph? And how does it affect your life today?
Well, it certainly has had an impact on my life. It's changed everything about it. The way it's changed it today is I'm still very much involved in the research side. I did a lot of work with Stanford Research Institute International when I was in the project, as well as with Science Applications International Corporation when the lab moved there. When the lab closed, and when the project closed in November of 1995, it moved to Laboratories for Fundamental Research in Palo Alto.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still a research associate there. And we're now doing research overseas in a number of different countries. I've made connections with my counterparts, the Russians, and that's been very interesting. In fact, my colleague Ed May and I are writing a book with the Russians.
Well, be sure you send me a copy, because I'd love to have you as guests on the show. This is something that I think is extremely important, and I think the more that we can talk about the fact that these abilities are normal, that they're natural, but like with any ability, you can have it, but if you don't train it and if it's not disciplined in the right way, you might become afraid of it, you might be able to make it into something it's not, and not be able to utilize it as a very effective tool. Joseph, do you have a website that people can go to if they want to know more about it? Now, your books are Memoirs of a Psychic Spy and Remote Viewing Secrets. Do you have a website that people can go to?
Yes, it's McEagle, McEagle.com.
McEagle.com. Well, we've got a little bit of time left before we'll close out our chat for today. What would you like my listeners to be aware of? Here you are, a man that is so experienced, so knowledgeable. Your stories are, again, it's like you're watching a James Bond movie, but it's magnified 10,000 times. You've entered into a world of mind that most people just maybe would have a little inkling of. What would you like to leave my listeners with in the way of a thought?
If people do get an interest enough in remote viewing that they want to participate in remote viewing, and they want to practice remote viewing, they can do that with any of their friends. And the rules are easy. You don't even have to buy my book, Remote Viewing Secrets. You can go to a library and check it out of a library if you want, and just peruse the book. The rules are in there. I mean it. It's not that difficult to learn. Practice makes perfect. And only do it if you're having fun, because it's not that difficult. If it's not fun, don't do it. Do things that you have fun doing.
I agree. My guest today has been Joseph McMoneagle. This is a man that has walked the walk. And he talks the talk, and he does it with clarity. His books are fascinating reading, Memoirs of a Psychic Spy, Remarkable Life of U.S. Government Remote Viewer, and also Remote Viewing Secrets, his handbook. So both of these should be in your library if you want to learn more about how you can develop your own talent, and if you want to explore this world of information that has been for so many hidden away. It's real. It is not make-believe. So go to his website if you want more information, MCEAGLE.com. That's MCEAGLE.com. Joseph, thank you so much for being with me today. I appreciate it very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Donna.
My pleasure. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Don't you go away now. We've got a lot of good things to share. We're going to be back in just a moment.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, we would be delighted to have you do that. Here are the telephone numbers you can call in to if you're in the USA. The telephone number to dial is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Now, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then let me do my thing after that. I don't want to know anything else about you. And then when I finish, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. And I tell people I'm an information resource, and I just so enjoyed having Joseph McMoneagle on the air with me today, because what people do not understand is that when it comes to psychic ability, this isn't something that's out there in la-la land. It is something that's built into us physiologically, but like any other fact of skill, you have to be able to discipline it. And so this is what I demonstrate when I'm on the air. And I just absolutely delight in doing it, because you need to know that there's no games, there's no gimmicks, there's no special tools, there's not a setup of callers to call in or anything like that. This is all information resource. And the one thing you can do with it, you can check the whole bit that I give you, or you can just say, wow, that's really something I'll think about. And then you base your choices and your decisions on being informed. And you know what? It's so much fun when you talk with people and you give information, as I do. I had this one situation with a mother, and she had come to me for a private session, and during this private session, we had talked a great deal about her daughter, and her daughter was not a nice person, and the daughter at this time was in her teens, and she was an absolute twit, awful. She was just giving her mother a terrible, terrible time. Well, this was on a business trip out of state where I met the mother, and so we had our consultation time, and I chatted with her, and then months went by, and I happened to be visiting in the same city, and she called me up, and she said, I'd like to have another session with you, and I said, well, that's wonderful. Well, she comes in to see me, and she said, Donna, I have to tell you, and she was smiling when she comes into the room, and she said, I have to tell you, you were 100% wrong. And I looked at her, and you can imagine how curious I was about that statement. Why in the world, if I was so bad at what I'd said, why in the world is she coming back to see me? And smiling to boot. That didn't make sense. Well, what happened is She said, I'm coming back to you because I want to tell you what happened. And I said, well, that's fine. So she said that when she'd gotten home from her first session with me, she had a tape, which I always make for people. She had the tape with her. And her daughter, who was this obnoxious, horrible, horrible teenager, and she was just talking down to her mother, and she said, I just know you went to see Donna Sebo, the psychic. I knew that you were going to do that. You talked about me the whole time, didn't you? And her mother said, well, it's none of your business. This was my session. It has nothing to do with you, and what I said is my own business, not yours. Well, the daughter really, really got pushy, and so the mother said, you want to listen to it that badly? Here, I'll put it in the tape recorder, and you listen. Well, I have to say, I wasn't very nice about the daughter. She was really terrible. And so I said it all out there without knowing anything about the girl, and I just gave the mother information. Her daughter got so mad at me. She finished listening to that tape. She said to her mother, how dare this woman make these statements about me? She doesn't know me. Oh, she's just terrible. And so she went on a rampage verbally. And her mother said, that's very interesting. She said her daughter was so mad at me that she totally went 180 degrees the opposite direction because I was not going to be proven right. And her mother said, laughing, she said, I'm coming back for more information. The first session worked so well, I want to make sure I keep her on course. And it was unbelievable. And I said, this is really something. So the reason I share that with you is, whether you talk with me or you talk with anyone else, always remember, your mind, your choices belong to you. They don't belong to anyone else. And if you hear information and it stimulates a thought patterning in you where you say, I really don't choose to have a particular outcome, or I'm seeing a patterning here that I really don't want to follow, you have the right to change it. And isn't that a wonderful thing to be aware of? The right of individuality, the right of being able to make choice. You're not some monkey pod down here that's just supposed to do nothing and sprout leaves. You are a thinking, processing, evaluating type of personality. At least you should be. And don't ever think that everybody else knows more than you do. The process of learning is always on that curve of experience. So be aware of yourself. And when you're using these tools, whether you're trying to develop them yourself, whether you call in for a reading or you go to talk to somebody else, always remember your right of individuality is to be cherished. Your right to think and to reason is to be respected. And always be willing to ask questions. And know if you don't understand something, you can ask questions until you finally get the right question asked, where you get the answer that you need. Or it may evolve a level of development and self-discovery with you, not unlike Joseph McMoneagle, that'll totally change and transform your life in the most phenomenal ways. So I feel so privileged to be able to bring this kind of information and so many other different levels of information to you because, you know, it's an education process for me as well. Nobody ever knows it all, but I'm delighted to share with you what I do perceive. So give me a buzz if you want to chat. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756 or 530-876. 3222. I have such a strong faith in the spirit of the human being, and I've been called naive by many people. That was said to me when I was a young kid, and people would look at me, and I would express positive statements, and they'd say, oh, you're just so naive. You just don't understand the real world. Well, naive means unsophisticated, and I was, when I was younger, very unsophisticated, but I'll tell you what. As a mature adult, I still have that faith in the human being. And there's a gentleman, Charles Holman, that I think is a very good man to talk about today, because this is a man who has worked for over 30 years reuniting passengers with their luggage. Now, he works in New York City's Pennsylvania Station. And if ever you've been in that area, you know how busy that is. I mean, 24 hours a day, you've got people going in and out. And lots of times, people who are going into that Pennsylvania Station, there's all kinds of stuff that are going on, and they're under a lot of stress. And he has operated the Lost and Found there in the Pennsylvania Station. And he has been able to bring items lost back to the owners in an incredible way. He really goes above and beyond the call of duty to be able to bring things together with their rightful owners. He said, I play detective, and he looks for any kind of a clue. Once he found a man's wallet that happened to have the man's business card, and the guy was from São Paulo, Brazil. Now, somebody forwarded the letter to Germany where the guy was working, and he called in and he said, we FedExed his wallet to him. He didn't even know where he'd lost it. And he said, no information is too small to work with. Sometimes he's even used a barcode from supermarket tags to get keys back to somebody, magazine subscription stickers, doctor's appointment cards, and he'll call and he'll say, who's in the 1245 slot? I've got their bag. He said, not only does he find wallets, bags, cell phones, he said, I found an artificial leg once. Can you imagine that? Who would leave one of those behind? Well, you just never know. There was a lady's crown. He's found big swords. There's been meat. He said, no matter what it is, passengers are always so grateful to him because of his conscientious attention. And he said, if he can't match an item to an owner, then he finds a good home for it, like homeless shelters. He said, cell phones get refurbished and donated to charities that help battered women. He said, but the most important thing to him as a man is that he gives hope to people. He said, we're all going to go through frustrations, even I have them. But he wants people to think positive. He said, people come in here crying sometimes, and I tell them, I'll call them, when I find it. Not if, but when I find it. What a wonderful man. How many times are we even aware of people like Charles Holman, who work in this environment that most of us don't see? We don't think twice about it because we're so busy. If we're tourists, we're out traveling around if we're in New York. But, you know, it's not just Charles in New York. There are many people that really, really care. There are people that work in the post office that have done wonderful things, and nobody ever knows who they are. There are a lot of people who choose to do donations anonymously. A lot of good people in this world. Oh, I know, we got a few schmucks running around in there. But hey, life would be boring if we didn't have something like that to talk about. And it's that we have to remember. Every time you see something on television or you encounter somebody's negative conversation about how horrible, how ugly this world is, remember one thing. You as an individual make a difference. And what you need to do is turn your light on and contributed some positive. If you are aware of certain things that are not really positive, then ask yourself a question, what can I do to make a difference? What can I do that is comfortable for me where I can demonstrate that there is hope, that there is a lot of good in life? Mr. Fuller did that with the Habitat for Humanity, and he now has the Fuller Institute once he was removed from his positioning with the Habitat for Humanity. This was a man who took something in the way of a concept and has literally built homes for tens of thousands of people around the world. Just started with an idea, and that's usually why thought has so much power. And when action combined with thought moves, it has its own momentum. So never believe that you cannot make a difference. You don't have to try to change the world. Just work with the environment you're in, like Charles does in that small room at the Pennsylvania Station in New York City. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. Phone lines are open, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756 and 530-876-3222. We're going to be right back. Don't go away.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. By the way, I want to bring forth the information again. You're going to hear this every day until the 8th of February. Why? Because I'm participating in a fabulous event, the 6th Annual Conscious Life Expo Conference and Film Festival. Now, this is going on from February the 8th through the 11th at the LAX Hilton, which is 5711 West Century Boulevard in Los Angeles. Now, if you want information on this, the 800 number is 367-5777, and the website to go to is consciouslifeexpo.com. You can get your tickets in advance. They have got so many wonderful speakers, including myself, that are going to be appearing there and sharing their special messages with you. They're going to have a spiritual comedy night, a conscious business symposium, and yoga classes daily. So this is a phenomenal event. It is in just a beautiful location, and it is a must participate in. And I will be giving you my booth starting next week as to where I'm going to be and also the time that I'm going to be speaking. So just know Daniel Brinkley's going to be there, Richard Hoagland, George Norrie, Lisa Williams, Peaceful Warrior Dan Millman, and oh my goodness, we've got so many others. So if you can, make it to the 6th Annual Conscious Life Expo Conference and Film Festival. And that's the 8th to the 11th. Don't forget their website, consciouslifeexpo.com, and their number is 800-367-5777. And I understand we had a caller. She did not want to go on the air, but she's called in from Jamaica, which I think is just so exciting, and she said she wanted to say hi and to thank me for the programming I'm doing. This is just so wonderful. I would just love to have an email from you. This means a lot, and it just is so nice to get this kind of a call from one of our listeners. Here on BBSRadio.com, we are heard around the world. And I want you to know that if you miss a program, you can always go into the archives, and you can retrieve it, and you can listen to it at your leisure. We have such wonderful guests. And the purpose of the Donna Sebo Show is to be able to empower you with information, no matter who you are, so that you have some options that you can work with that maybe you didn't know were available before. There was a significant part of my life when I found that I didn't even know the right questions to ask. I didn't even know you could ask questions. So when you learn that you can do this, when you're aware of other people that have differing points of view, it gives you a comparison that you can work with that allows you to make choices based on information, not just speculation. You can go in, especially since you're so web savvy. All of you listening to this show, You are people that are with it. You understand how valuable information is. And here at bbsradio.com, we're so pleased to have you as our listening family, and we want you to know that that is what we like to do. We like to bring you programming that's going to help you make choices with a right understanding in your life. And remember, it's ad infinitum. There are so many ways of doing things. We hear about war every day. On the television and radio, there's always going to be a comment about war. There's a war going on. My goodness, sometimes there's 11 or 12 of them simultaneously going on in different parts of the world. It's always ugly. But I loved this little thing that came across my desk, and it said, "It ain't your father's Pentagon. Here are some way out of the box weapon systems the military has considered, and they're all true." Now, these are ideas that people popped up with. The "who, me" device, this is a bomb that gives the enemy flatulence. Then someone else said, "How about a garlic bomb, which would cause severe halitosis so that the enemy cannot blend in with civilians?" That sounds like a winner. And this last one I thought was just precious. The love bomb, an aphrodisiac that makes the enemy too preoccupied with one another to fight us. I think they're all perfectly logical, don't you? This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756 if you're in Canada, and 530-876-3222. Now, by the way, for those of you in the Seattle area, I am going to be at a psychic expo put on by the Psychic Spectrum the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th of this month. And then also, I'm going to be back in Los Angeles on the 28th because I've got another speaking appearance that is coming up. And then in the month of March, I am going to be doing the Woman's Show in Seattle, Washington. So there's quite an itinerary that I have in the first quarter of this year, so you will be kept up to date. Don't forget to go to my website, DelphiInternational.com, where you can check my calendar and find out all of the good information. And if you want to be on my newsletter list, hey, just send me an email. Send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Diets, 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 diets. My goodness. You can have the cucumber and sauerkraut diet, or you can have the coffee and peanut diet. I mean, if you go on the web, there is a gazillion diets that are out there. And they all have this idea that they're going to be able to make a change. Well, there is a program, apparently, that was put together saying raw for 30 days. Now, this is something that Jack LaLanne started so many years ago, because when he was a teenager, he was just a mess, and he saw Paul Bragg. And when he was a teenager, this turned his life around, and he became the fitness guru that at the youthful age of 95, he is still promoting, and he just is a great guy. Now, they did a test for this show, and it was 6 diabetics that ate a vegan organic diet of uncooked nuts, seeds, and veggies. And by the end of the 30 days, all of the participants ended up having the opportunity to give up insulin, and they lost about 25 pounds. Now, a raw food diet consists of mostly plant-based foods that aren't heated above 115 degrees or so. And the people that are really supportive of being vegan says it helps to ease many conditions from migraines to arthritis. But it's a very hardcore type of a food program and leaves out a lot of foods that many people enjoy. So Andrea Giancoli of the American Dietetic Association said, "Why don't you blend raw and cooked foods?" And she said, of course, you can also look at something with no food at all, but fasting is not going to last very long for most people. But they are both of them sort of tough to stay with. They said your best bet is a healthy, diverse diet that you can stick to for life. And basically what it is good common sense. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be talking with you on Monday. Have a fabulous weekend. It's going to be an open mic day on Monday. That's right. No guests. It's just going to be all dedicated to you, so open line for the entire hour. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Have a fabulous, fabulous weekend, for you're the light that lights up life, the life that you live, and for those around you. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.